Good morning and welcome to the March 2023 ADM Farm Direct Fertilizer Report. This monthly conversation is intended to help you stay on top of global fertilizer prices and buy in bulk at the most opportune times. I am your host today, Zach Jans, and with us, we have a whole list of guys to get through here this morning. We got Brian Henry with ADM BQCI to talk a little bit about what's been going on in the grain side of life. On the fertilizer side of things, we got Jake Nieder with us, as always, and BK Morris. And if we can fit a few more folks in there, we will, but we'll get things taken off here with Brian. Brian, I'll be honest with you, it's felt like we've taken some wind out of these sails in the grain markets. What do you got to say about that this morning?
As mentioned, my name is Brian Henry. I do manage Benson Quinn Commodities. Information related to this entity can be found at bqci.com. A lot of information about the markets, about positioning, etc., put on that site. So if you have some interest, you could even go in there and listen to the daily call that we put together every day about 8:15. In terms of the market, boy, the worms really turned compared to last year at this time. There's a lot of different features that are at play in these markets, with a lot of them being cross currents coming from the outside markets. If I'm going to touch on the fundamental pieces here first, I've got my own opinions, probably not shared by a lot of people, regarding the banking sector, et cetera. But from the fundamental standpoint, a lot of this stuff is relatively clear and really kind of explains what's happening with this price action. Biggest piece at this point regarding soybeans is the fact that Brazil just continues to cheapen their offer. They may have a 155 million metric ton record by a long shot bean crop. I believe the offers out of Brazil at this point is basically a 70 under bid offered at 45 under. So you're starting to get into a situation where Brazil beans even work into the U.S. In addition to that, with U.S. getting knocked out on the export side, the other piece you're looking at is, of course, China. China's been slow to recover from their COVID slowdown. Their crush margins are not the best. I do believe they will end up importing 97 million metric ton of beans, but at this point, their crush margins are not the best. The Chinese hog feeding margins are not the best. And we're basically left in a situation where, though Argentina has a very, very poor crop, global buyers can skirt the U.S. and look to Brazil for a cheaper bean, a cheaper meal, and also for the veg oil. Of late, veg oils have also been under pressure. In addition to all that, we did get finally current on the commitment of traders report. What we found on that was, yes, the funds were significant sellers in beans, meal, and oil, but it also indicates they still have room to sell beans, they still have room to sell meal before they get down to a short position. Add in price action not cooperating with the market structure, and then you've got a situation here where it just feels like the path of least resistance is to the downside yet on beans, despite the fact that domestic crush margins remain very, very good. I think meal has to be watched closely here as it approaches $450 and is trading at a significant premium to what you can find in Brazil. So just not a real rosy picture from a fundamental standpoint in beans. And I'd note that where you look at Brazilian corn crop and say there's a long ways to go on the bulk of their production, their bean crop's essentially in the bag at this point and is going to have a significant impact on what happens with U.S. values here going forward. Flip to corn here a little bit. We continue to focus on Chinese demand. Compared to beans, I would say that you can draw the line to a couple of fundamentally supportive pieces in corn. Another 178,000 met ton of corn sold to China here just overnight, and the U.S. does remain the cheap offer. In addition to that, ethanol has been a little bit better here of late. One of the factors that's developed here over the course of the last couple of days, well, it's kind of twofold. One piece is part of Xi meeting with Putin. One of the items of topic was the fact that China may potentially end up buying a whole slug of new crop wheat from Russia, which I'd anticipate would end up in China's feed ration and may reduce the amount of corn demand they have going forward. I think we're a little ways off on that. The other factor that's just kind of come to light is sounds like Zelensky has invited Xi to Ukraine to talk about the situation. And I think you run the risk in that scenario of maybe a relatively large group of people looking for actual peace in this situation. And in that situation, you'd probably anticipate that U.S. leadership would probably still be in support of war. So it'll be interesting to see what all happens there. But at the end of the day, the corn market, it feels like, needs to find better demand or confirm that there's still demand here at these levels. And I guess from a fundamental standpoint, I can't be hugely bearish the old crop corn at this point, but we'll have to see how all this stuff develops. One of the interesting things that came out on the commitment to traders report as it pertains to corn is you did see another week of the funds selling about 75,000 corn. Last time the funds were this short corn was at 325. And this is, I believe, the first time ever that the funds have been short corn as we approach planting. So those are some market structure pieces that we can keep in mind at this point. U.S. wheat, the big issue, as always, in U.S. wheat is the cheap global offer, whether you look at Russia, whether you look at Ukraine. EU still has wheat for sale. And basically what you end up with is global wheat markets that are in search of demand, and that demand appears to be into the feed ration. So it's basically made it hard for people to stay long these wheat markets. Potentially there's some supportive pieces coming up with the dryness in the southern plains, the cold, and what will one day be wet conditions here in the northern plains. But at this point, the market isn't interested in it. The funds are quite happy being short a significant amount of wheat, and it just doesn't feel like, from a U.S. standpoint, there's going to be a catalyst that's going to be able to push those funds off that short position. So ultimately, what it feels like to me is, if we get into some rallies here into the spring, it feels like it's going to be a good opportunity to let go of old crop wheat supply. Week from Friday, we get to the March 31 report with quarterly stocks and acreage. From a quarterly stock standpoint, you'd anticipate seeing tight stocks. The spreads are indicating that we'll see tight stocks. The question in beans, of course, is going to be the crush. Can we keep these facilities running at a pace to keep up with what the USDA anticipates for crush? And then, of course, exports, as it feels like we've gotten pushed well out of the prime window in terms of exports. So those will be key factors. And perhaps a look at beans from the standpoint of, okay, supplies are tight, but can they increase due to potentially limited crush and, of course, a lack of exports? On the corn side, when we get to that number, you will see tight stocks, but yet I don't know that we've garnered enough demand yet to tighten those stocks anymore. And from a wheat standpoint, yeah, it'll certainly look like the stocks are tight, but stocks in wheat have been growing just due to our poor export performance to this point. We're just simply on the outside looking in. From an export standpoint, with the exception of maybe some niche business into some traditional buyers, you get to the acreage side of things, you're seeing estimates anywhere 90 to 92-ish is kind of what I see from a corn standpoint. At one point, the economics indicated it might be higher. Seems like perhaps the bar's been lowered just a little bit based on the economic factor. I think we're in a slot on corn here, kind of 90.5 to 91.5. with a decent portion of that acreage, depending on how the spring ends up going. And then, of course, from the bean side, maybe 87.5 to 88.5 type of scenario. I don't know that that's going to draw a whole bunch of attention one way or the other. I think it'll be nice to get the numbers out and get maybe a better look at spring and what's, you know, the potential. Where the acreage did increase was wheat, and a lot of that, of course, is winter wheat, with the strong possibility that a fair chunk of that winter wheat is ultimately going to fail. And the question, perhaps, is what happens if that crop fails, or if we finally deem that that crop fails and then these areas get moisture? Does it become a Milo situation, what have you? So there's a lot of different pieces going on in these markets, and a lot of them deal with factors that grain folks don't always have a lot of control over. But ultimately, if you continue to see these banking crises, what you'd anticipate is the Fed's action, Treasury's action, FDIC action is probably going to be a piece that has the potential to lean pretty supportive longer term from a standpoint of maybe introducing inflation back into the system. Fed today, you anticipated 25-point basis hike, which, okay, is fine, but ultimately, through other operations, they've essentially ease their balance sheet by $300 billion last week, and it could be another $300 or $400 or $500 billion this week. So ultimately, conditions are loosening up. Do they loosen up to the point where the funds want to come back in and own grains and oil seeds because they see grains and oil seeds as decent collateral? I think it can happen. I just don't think we're there yet. So with that, I'll turn it back to you, Zach.
As always, Brian, appreciate the commentary, and I know you'll be sticking around for questions that folks have later on here. We're going to move to BK, and BK, I'll be honest with you, I'm driving through Northeast Iowa right now. Not a whole heck of a lot of snow and a little foggy, but feels like we're still a little ways away from seeing some meaningful demand show up. You want to touch on some fertilizer markets here for us?
Yes, sir. I'm BK with Fertilizer Week. I'll start overseas with the nitrogen products. Perhaps the most important one right now to look at is urea. The good news is the U.S. is competitive with prices that global suppliers can get in India, and that's going to probably keep the Middle East tons coming here, at least in part, but we're not necessarily providing that much competition for India. We're definitely following rather than leading there, and this is where it gets sticky. Up until last month, when we spoke last, I was convinced we would be able to bring in the urea we need for the season. But at this point, things are getting a little snug. We're seeing prices still fall at NOLA for reasons that are a little bit inexplicable to me. At the same time, we've got the expectation of needing that amount of corn that Brian Henry just talked about. So I guess my point of view here, just to be blunt, is I think the U.S. is still short of urea. Arguably, we need somewhere between 800,000 and 1 million tons more than we have in the import lineup right now through May. And that's getting to be a tough knot. It's not that it can't be done. Yes, it can. But it means we would need to see some real increases in the potential import lineup that weren't there as of last week. So urea to me, on an overall U.S. basis, looks tight. On the UAN side, it's a little simpler. If you compare prices in Western Europe, their import price right now is the equivalent of about $329 a metric ton, call it $298 a short ton equivalent. That's certainly above the 270, 280 indication we're seeing at New Orleans. But of course, most of the UAN is being bought in the interior, where the U.S. producers are still getting a better net back than they're getting overseas. These higher prices in Europe will probably come into play a little bit farther forward. Right now, the European import price on paper is closer to 330 euro, but the forward price is only 305 euros. So in other words, if you want it today, they are a little tight. If they want it closer to when they actually need it, then the price again gets down closer to where we are at NOLA. The problem I see there is that we could be in a little bit of a hairy situation if the price were to rise at Europe and the U.S. price doesn't rise, because then the U.S. Gulf guys, Nutrien and CF, will be incentivized to ship more overseas. Finally, I'll talk about ammonia only briefly. The U.S. is just a very inexpensive market compared to Europe. They've got higher production costs, but their costs have come down enough that they're able to produce more of the downstream products. And that's really the test for Europe, is how much does it cost for them to produce their dry nitrates? And things are looking better for them than they were certainly a year ago. So I don't see a huge surge in U.S. exports. On the other hand, U.S. exports have been pretty steady on the ammonia side. So I also see, again, a fairly snug market there by the time we get to the season. You know, we're short DAP. We're short DAP because we exported a lot when that was where the better price was for Mosaic earlier this year. We're also short DAP because we're just plain importing less. Having said that, we're competitive with Argentina right now, arguably. So I don't see us losing much more ground. But I also can't tell you we're going to suddenly see really cheap prices, especially in time for when it's going to be needed. At this point, you know, the Moroccans would love to send more here. The Tunisians would probably like to send more here. But by the end of this month, that's a little tough to start loading phosphate cargoes in April and expect them to get here and do anything but sit down in the U.S. Gulf. Because even with the bad weather we're having, it looks like that it'd just be too late to arrive to be useful. Potash is a very simple question. The world is still awash in potash. NOLA has still got plenty of potash. We've been re-exporting bits and pieces. And I expect that to continue over the next few weeks and even over the next couple of months. I don't have a bullish argument to make for potash. If the Chinese come and buy more than expected, if the Indians were to buy more than expected, then that might change. But that supply is good. And that's where I'll stop.
Appreciate that update, BK. And always a wild ride on these fertilizer markets. I'm going to bring Jake in. Jake, if you don't mind trying to wrap up kind of what BK had to say and bring it back a little bit closer to home and give us your feedback and your updates on where the market is currently today in the U.S.
Yeah, Zach, I think that we've got an interesting next couple weeks because really what BK talked about, I can't disagree with, right? We're at that cusp of where product can come in and can arrive on time. We're at that point where we need further nitrogen imports, particularly urea, to come in here for that May, June timeframe to make the top dress markets. At the same token, we're not overly attractive to the world. We're not under the world values. And so what we're seeing are cargoes lining up slow, but not steady. And so I believe we'll get balanced. Here's what I think is the next 30 days is 100% about weather and when people go to market. And if all the markets start driving at once, prices are going to move up. I do think that we are at a point where you've had stability in the markets now on all these product commodities for the last 30 days. There's not been major price moves up or down. We've been kind of in a $30 range on some of the moves that have occurred, some products even tighter than that. We expect that to kind of continue until the buying happens, and then we'll have more of your in-season price spikes, your logistics premiums that start getting built into the prices. So we think we're at the floor for the time being. Now it's probably more important, Zach, to start thinking about what is past that. What does it look like when we get into the fill period? When's the right time to start buying UAN for the summer and phosphates for that other time frame? So I think it's maybe important to kind of think about what the overall market structure is. And right now we've got cheap natural gas in the globe. The European plants are turning back on running. This enables us to see a reduction in the cost curve on nitrogen versus what we all started with a year ago at this time. We are seeing the exports begin to come out of the major global markets like China, making more product available for the global markets. This is going to have an effect on nitrogen as well in the eastern marketplace and a little bit into Brazil, ultimately pushing some of those North African tons and even Russian tons here into the United States for the fill period. So we do expect there'll be a bit of a reset after spring season, probably a $40, $50 type move on pricing around urea specifically. Anhydrous ammonia, a little hard to talk about. A lot of it depends on what volume comes out of Russia. And if we saw more volume come out of Russia, we could have a very big move downwards in pricing. If it continues to be as it's been, then we probably have just a slight pullback on the NH3 front for the fill timeframe because it is tight without that product in the global marketplace. Phosphate-wise, I agree with BK's analysis. We have a market that is balanced, if you will, for the time being. We're headed into a higher season in Brazil. I think given the reduction of overall pricing of P and K in the global market, that we should see improved global demand. And this ultimately should lead to a recovery in pricing as we get into kind of that third quarter timeframe. We think demand will be pretty good for the coming fall timeframe, both on phosphates and potash. So maybe a little bit of turbulence over the next few months, then a recovery in pricing. So that one's one where we could see the buying start a little bit earlier. We might start banging the drum in that May, June timeframe when it's a little uncomfortable to think about buying forward for fall. But that might be the time that we're, at least on paper, it looks like we could be targeting for some good buying opportunities on your P&K for the fall. Ammonium sulfate, kind of a bug light for all markets on ammonium sulfate here. We're seeing it start to run tighter in all markets, even a little bit up in Canada on the delivery side. So I might mention that ammonium sulfate's been one of those sleeper products. It hasn't been as volatile in pricing. It's probably time to get that locked in for this spring season. We have had some plant outages, which are going to drive some tightness and some delays. And ultimately, that leads to price spiking in those regions. UAN's been stable. I think we've kind of hit the highlights on the UAN front. When we talk about urea, it's a little bit of a mirror to it. UAN has been stable. It's not had major moves here over the last 30 to 40 days. Prices have somewhat corrected. I think producers have a sales book on now that they're able to manage their go-to-market strategies with. Don't see a significant move in UAN pricing until we get into the summertime. Similar type pullback on urea, maybe a $50, $60 pullback on UAN prices. as we have to slow down the amount of imports coming in for Russia during the fill period so the domestic producer has the ability to clear their tons. Those are the themes that we're watching. That's kind of an outlook past the current markets, Zach. And I think that gives you a little feel for where our mind's at right now.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like it's pretty safe to assume that we're here in all major markets. And I think it's pretty safe to assume that if you haven't done so, it's probably time to really start thinking about spring as we sit here. And it feels like for most of the country, the next 30 days will be pretty pivotal as we move into what looks like could be a decent corn acre number and fertility rates that are going to be applied. With that, we're going to open it up for questions. Ask away.
Any thoughts on the fuel markets? At the current point, from a U.S. standpoint, we do not necessarily have an issue in terms of the amount of crude oil. We've been exporting some crude. To this point, production has stayed relatively stable. And we are seeing some decline in usage. The concern regarding diesel and the concern regarding gasoline, right now you are seeing some of these refining facilities switch over so they can produce more of their summer blend. The other issue, and I believe this is going to be an issue in the U.S. for a long, long time, but most likely Mother Nature is going to have the most to do with it, and that is the fact that we are running refinery utilization about as hard as we've been running it for the longest time period I've seen in a long, long time. And ultimately, when you start getting into the summer, you start getting into hurricane season, start getting into some of these other situations, there is potential that we could knock some of this refining capacity offline. So from that standpoint, I believe the exposure most likely in these markets is to the upside. But in terms of how the managed money folks want to trade it, in terms of how people feel about the economy, I don't think you have to race in and add a whole bunch of coverage right now. I think you just have to look for opportunities on dips. And if we get those dips, I would not argue against anyone that was looking to add some coverage near these values. Longer term, ultimately, we've done the best we could to shut off most of our sources of energy in the U.S. So longer term, as we see a general lack of increased production and see some of these older wells burn a little bit, we're probably going to end up fairly tight in terms of supply of crude oil or supply of input stock anyway.
Do you anticipate the $56 pullback by Sidrex time, or should we be locking Sidrex needs at this price point?
Zach, we can't hear him. I'll step in and answer that one. So my commentary on the move for UAN would be after fill. That's where we think that would occur. What could drive it to happen before fill? Well, bad weather, delayed season, delayed planting. There's a lot of price move that can occur over the next 30 days just based on weather. So we have plenty of chances to be wrong here on what we think's going, in the price direction. But generally speaking, that move that we're anticipating would be after the top dress run, after we get through what we would consume for this crop this year. That's when we expect the pricing movement to occur, not necessarily post pre-plant or anything like that.
Okay. One more question. It sounded like AMS price isn't going to get any better.
That's right. With the market outages on some of the production, it's likely to turn around a bit. We're not talking $50 moves, but we're talking $15, $20 moves in pricing and tightening. That it's time to get that one locked in. It's been sleeper long enough to go get it done for this spring season. Thank you for the question.
The high price of input cost, market falling out, machinery gearing doubling in the last 5 years. Do you see the farmer economy with the interest rate raising doing what has happened in the banking economy? Where do you think that's at?
I'll let Brian talk to the commodity side. It's definitely a factor. So the last time we had a big interest rate increase like this, it slowed global liquidity down and it just basically killed the markets and made them inactive for about a good solid 4 or 5 months. Is that a risk to the current environment? Yes, it absolutely is a risk. Is that something that we are using in our estimates for price moves right now? No, it is not. It is something that we're trying to be aware of and think through what happens if that's the case. Well, when global markets struggle and then the liquidity dries up, people can't lend and borrow. It's the third world countries that usually get hit first, which means inventories get pushed to more stable countries, United States, Europe. where the banking economies are not struggling as much. Now, even though it's a U.S. and Europe issue, generally the world still seems to trust those banking economies more than it affects these third world countries. So I don't foresee that being a factor here over the next 30 to 60 days. Could it continue to become a factor as we go into the summer months? Sure. But keep in mind, you're talking to fertilizer people and you're asking about financial economies now, and take that recommendation for what it's worth.
All these biological products that are on the market, can you do any good with them, or are they just snake oil?
Well, it's a good question. We find ourselves in that biological market and selling some of those products. I can promise you, from our perspective, we're doing university research to try and validate our claims. We are proponents of regulation being added so that it helps take non-proven products off the market. Because it's not a regulated space, there are products out there that may not be able to do what they say it can do. Again, I think this boils down to you and a local agronomist and a trusted partner conversation. We do have our products, one that's made by Savic Industries that we're working, which is a biostimulant. But then we also have our NeoVita 43, which is a sugar-based product that we are selling as well, that has university research that we've worked with the University of Illinois to help validate and prove some of our tests here. And so we feel we're doing the right things to have a good quality product. Can't speak to others, of course, out there.
The nature of the biological space is it's simply the Wild West, right? We're trying to make sure that what we're doing as ADM is validating what we're seeing on sheets of paper with real world activity, right? Real world examples. And to Jake's point, we're trying to be the part of this that's more in the validation mode than just trying to prove a claim that's on a sheet of paper.
What are you guys actually seeing for cash prices for UAN or urea here in the upper Midwest? Ballpark.
That's a loaded question, caller, because if you're getting it from us, we know what our cash price is. If you're getting it from a competitor, it could be well over $100 higher than what we're quoting you. Go ahead, Zach. What's our general price up there?
You're talking between production or interior assets. I guess upper Midwest, you're probably going to have some sort of four in front of it from a 32 perspective. And I would say the same thing with urea. As we move into season, obviously there's going to be some sort of a logistical issue. There always seems to be. It just depends on if it's an interior issue or if it's a river issue or if it's a production issue. There's always going to be something that's going to trigger some sort of market adjustment, whether it's the upside or the downside. That's very much so yet to be determined. From the standpoint of, obviously, you look outside at Mother Nature. If we continue the spell that we're on, you know, this price decrease because of the lack of application that's happening, or if it turns warmer in certain parts of the country, does it turn no more positive for price and we see an uptick in price just based upon, you know, application happening and the demand period being now? So that's an extremely loaded question, and I hope we did a little bit of justice trying to answer it, but there's a lot of variables in the next 30 days that are going to define all markets, not just specifically nitrogen. Definitely reach out to your local rep and sit down and get down to the nitty-gritty with where freight is in certain areas, where terminal values are in certain areas, just so you have a better picture versus just simply talking about the Midwest as a whole.
Yeah, I think if you were to look at the pricing out of most of our terminals, you're going to be in the mid-300s, but then you've got to add on your freight and everything on top of it. I think it's good for you to have an idea what you can get from us, because I think our price is one of the best ones out there. This has been a hard market to navigate.
Two questions. On fuel, why do you see the huge difference between diesel and gasoline? And number two, on the fertilizer, I have a half of my fertilizer usage purchased so far, should I go ahead and lock in the second half?
We've been proponents of locking in your fertilizer for a while now. And some of you who followed our advice have said, well, it's hell, it's just gotten cheaper. There's been a lot of international volatility that could drive these prices up very quickly. Is that the likely thing that's going to happen? Probably not. It seems like we're in a somewhat stable market at the moment today. However, taking out all those potential black swan events of wars or financial crisis, the market's relatively stable. We need more imports to come in between now and the end of spring season, so we probably don't go below the world market, and we probably can't go get above it too much because we also don't need an oversupply at the end of spring season. So that leads both kind of what BK talked about as well as myself. It makes us think that we're kind of there, and as we get into spring season and markets run, prices naturally move up too, because we're getting a lot of movement of product throughout the whole system. So yes, in answer to your question, quite basically, I'd say, yeah, it's time to get your product locked in on the second half of your purchase. We don't see a massive backside fall off if you wait till the last possible moment. In fact, we probably see more potential for logistic issues and increases in pricing by further waiting and delaying in your purchasing.
In terms of diesel production, in terms of heating oil production, the U.S. got behind the eight ball quite some time ago now when there was a East Coast refiner that went down. The main focus of that refinery was producing heating oil, aka diesel, and different variations. Now, that refinery is never coming back up. So that's where you've gotten into a situation where supplies, though they have increased to some extent, still remain untenably tight compared to before that refinery had been taken down. So you end up with a situation where for a long time we saw an awful lot of pretty good demand, the need to move products around, and we just simply weren't producing enough diesel to not reduce the stocks we had available. Now we've gotten to a point where the amount of product moving around has slowed a little bit. There's a little more focus on producing diesel fuel, but there's still certainly some work to do. In addition to that, there had been points where we brought in a fair amount of refined product into the East Coast, mostly in terms of heating oil and diesel, and that had come in from Russia. So for the most part, that shut down. Now, ultimately, a lot of Russian crude's ending up in India or Asia, and it's being processed, and the U.S. to some extent is still bringing that in, but it's not bringing it in a timely enough manner to really increase supply. So everyone's always a little bit on edge on supply, even though supply has improved.
Okay, let me ask you kind of a wild question on fuel. You know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. The consumer, national consumer, burns gasoline. They screen the lives when it goes up. All these trucking companies, they charge a fuel surcharge so that they don't really care what fuel is. Do you think that enters in any?
In terms of the price difference, in terms of where it trades at, I can't say it doesn't have any influence at all. But at the end of the day, I would still go back and say the primary feature is the supply of diesel, especially in certain areas like the Southeast and East Coast, has recently been on the cusp of whether or not we're going to have an adequate enough supply. We see it in grain and corn too. You either have supply or you have supply concerns. When you have supply, your issue is demand. Where's the demand? Demand will set the price. On the diesel side of things, over the course of the last year, 18 months, the concern's been on the supply side. So basically, the item has had to price itself at a level that guarantees that we won't go empty on it. And if you're short of supply, that level is typically higher. So I can't say that other item doesn't have some influence, but I still do believe that a lot of it goes back to basic economics. Where's the supply, and what's it going to ensure that we continue to have supply?
So old crop values spread between May and July on both corn and beans pushed out to 19-20 cent inversions. You know, we've got firming basis values today. I mean, are you anticipating a lot of that to disappear going forward or not?
In terms of the May-July spreads or the basis levels, ultimately, I believe we're in a situation here where the traditional funds, the managed money type groups, do not like what they see from the standpoint of the economy. Here's what they don't like. Last week, not all of them, but some of them were short more fixed income than they'd ever been in their entire eternity. The 10-year note moved a full five handles. And ultimately, that movement was them getting out because they'd lost money. So ultimately, I believe a lot of this managed money group is either short of funds or they haven't been able to get their value at risk back in shape. And I think there comes a point where they look at commodities as a valuable piece of collateral. But right now, I just don't think they're in position to come in and buy them. In that event, if I'm right on that, I really believe the basis levels with an influence on the spreads is ultimately going to have to get you guys to sell some product here again one of these days. especially on the corn side, but probably even on the bean side as we get into summer, just simply because, let's face it, the board isn't doing it right now. And I think you'd confirm that.
So really, I mean, cash and basis and trying to do the heavy lifting right now is everybody, the funds have exited to kind of cover their butts. And they don't have a catalyst to jump back in until they see some stability somewhere.
I believe that's the case, but at a minimum, they've got to be able to get their value at risk back in line, because that was blown completely to smithereens last week when FDIC, Treasury, and I want to give them all credit for this, basically came out and said, we're going to select some people to insure uninsured deposits for, and others we might just let go. It was a crafty move with that group. Always pay attention to their second sentence.
Crop soybeans, go ahead, sell now or wait?
Old crop, I'm in the camp that, especially if you want to move them here soon, to sell the next rally in this market. From a new crop standpoint, there are other features that can come into play in through spring, in through summer. But ultimately, what we've learned about soybeans at this point is global supply is going up year over year. The U.S. isn't competitive from an export standpoint. And probably the biggest issue right now is China's crush margins, hog feeding margins have deteriorated. And at that point, you always have to be a little bit curious just how much the Chinese are going to come in here to try to buy supply. From a U.S. standpoint, I don't think we have any extra beans to speak of. And even at the end of the day, I'm not entirely sure we're going to have any extra. But with the lack of export business here going forward, I do think you could anticipate supplies increasing a little bit and potentially futures prices dropping even a little bit further.
I have heard some commentary that China is having a bad ASF issue, and that part of the ramifications of that was going to be that they would start leaning more on their rice production for food source, and that that was going to lead to them quitting the export of phosphates. Is that reasonable thought?
Doesn't feel to be the case for the 2023 year. China's going to decrease their phosphate exports over time, but we expect China to return to the market this year. That's a longer-term trend that they're going to be going down the road with, but that's probably more than 5 or so years out before we get to that point. We are seeing deals being done out of China already, even though they're not out of their restriction season yet. And those deals are being lined up for post-export restrictions. So no reason to think that the Chinese supply doesn't enter back into the market for this year, and at least for the potential foreseeable future.
Please join us for the next report on April 26th. And hopefully you guys are sitting in a corn planter and doing something you truly love to do. Till then, if you want to learn more about ADM Fertilizer, please go to fertilizer.admadvantage.com. Thanks a lot for listening, everybody, and have a great rest of your week.